former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside to the VSiN studios here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line on the DraftKings Network. We say hello to our friends on the DK Network. Also, you can view us on Zumo Play, Roku, and Samsung TV+. Femi Abebefe out here in Las Vegas. Michael Lombardi in the great state of New Jersey. And Michael, this is the penultimate Saturday of the college football regular season. This is when it starts to get real here for college football. We will get into a lot of the college football fun here, but obviously
what was that word you just used?
Penultimate.
It means
wow. the second to last. You
wow,
like that one?
that's impressive. Yeah, I mean, wow, that's good. Yeah, I like it. Welcome. Yeah, I didn't know that. Awesome. Good job, Femi.
Not quite an SAT word, but still, you know, it's, you know, we're dabbling a little bit. You know, we're
dabbling.
I don't know how I don't remember how I scored on my verbal on the SAT, but we don't need to get into all of that stuff. But how are you doing on this Saturday morning?
I am well. I'm doing well. I think it's one of those days where, you know, I'm excited. You know, I'm still surprised that Washington's a dog at Oregon State, understanding that Corvallis is a tough place to play. I'm surprised Arizona's a favorite at home against Utah, you know, because Arizona has not fielded well against them. And, you know, the Burrow news kind of hit and like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this happened. But yeah, I can believe it happened. And, you know, the NFL just continues to trek on. The Pittsburgh Steelers are truly like, you know, it's like in grade school, you learn these tales about, you know, the turtle and the tortoise and the hare, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's the one who just keeps methodically going along, maybe not flashy, maybe not, you know, making the analytical community happy, but just winning games. And that's your Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, that is your Pittsburgh Steelers right now, who find themselves in the advantageous situation being what it is with the quarterback injuries in the AFC North. Let's set the table, though, first before we get into that news, because we will begin the show talking about that, because I want to get your reaction to the news that broke yesterday with Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals. But coming up, we have three guests on the program, as always. In 15 minutes, our buddy Tim Murray, host of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast, also host of VSiN Primetime, will be joining us to give out his college football card. I'm looking at the rundown right now. Tim has seven plays on the rundown, or six plays rather on the rundown. So it'll be a lot of fun to get into that with Tim. We'll also get his thoughts on Washington at Oregon State. Then in 45 minutes, Chris Sims, the analyst for NBC, NFL analyst, obviously played in the National Football League. Michael, you know him very well. We'll discuss all the happenings in the National Football League. Can the Bengals kind of right the ship with Joe Burrow done for the remainder of the season? We'll ask Chris Sims about that 45 minutes from now. And then in hour number two, 11:30 Eastern, 8:30 Pacific, Matt Eumanns, host of VSiN Tonight and the co-host of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast, will join us with his usual card in the NFL and college football. That'll be two segments in studio with our buddy Matt Eumanns. But Michael, let's get to it though. Joe Burrow done for the remainder of the season with a torn ligament in his right wrist. The last pass that he threw this season, a touchdown pass to Joe Mixon that took the lead in the game Thursday night against the Baltimore Ravens. But you saw that shot when the camera panned to Burrow on the sidelines and he couldn't grip the football, and you could just see the frustration on his face to where, uh-oh, this isn't good. And then we get the news the next day that it's even worse than what we imagined. Burrow done for the year.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I went back and watched the Houston game to think that, you know, everybody's talking about this cast he was wearing when he got off the airplane. And if you look early in the game, Orlando Brown gets pushed back into Burrow. And, you know, it looks like his hand gets caught between Orlando Brown's body and you know, his body. And he walks off the field and he shakes his wrist, you know. Mm-hmm. And you're thinking, well, did he get hurt there? But then he played the entire game and had no problem. I mean, he had no problem, played the entire game and had no issue at all. So I don't know if that was the case. He threw the ball in pregame. I didn't see him get hit on any drive, you know, but obviously, this is a devastating loss for Cincinnati. When I wrote my column yesterday morning, Femi, there was no word out on him yet, and I wrote it as if the Bengals were basically done, whether he came back or not, because their defense is not good. And, you know, they've had the changes at safety. They lost Von Bell. They lost Bates. You know, they didn't have Hubbard the other night. Hendrickson's playing hurt. They're just not the same team defensively that they were. They were relying on turnovers. They were giving up a ton of yards, and they were relying on making plays in the secondary, which hasn't manifested itself. So to me, I think that's been the challenge. You know, as good as Burrow is, and I think where they are offensively, I think Zach Taylor has to kind of look and say, you know, maybe I need to change what I'm doing.
Yeah, no, that's a big look in the mirror situation for the Cincinnati Bengals. And big news, obviously, with the Bengals losing Burrow, but also a big impact in the betting market. I mean, we saw their odds shift drastically with this news that Joe Burrow no longer going to be the starting quarterback due to injury. To win the AFC North, they went from 25-1, which obviously was a long shot to begin with at 5-5, now 45-1. To win the AFC, 14-1 became 50-1. And then to win the Super Bowl, 30-1 became 100-1, pretty much putting Bengals in the territory of it ain't going to happen for Cincinnati this year in 2023. And Burrow, to your point there, because everyone's been talking about the compression sleeve on the right wrist as he was getting off of the plane. I know there was a photo that was since deleted by the Cincinnati Bengals. A little bit weird, but they deleted it. And then also for the viewing audience right now, they're seeing the video, this from a local news reporter, of Burrow getting off of the team bus and trying to pick up his luggage and using his left hand and not the right hand because of the bandage or the compression sleeve on the right wrist there. And Burrow said that yesterday that, hey, this was an injury that happened Thursday night. It had nothing to do with any sort of previous injury, but the brace or whatever. And they said that this was all a new injury. Burrow wasn't on the injury report. We'll get into that a little bit here, but I want to play this clip though, Michael, from head coach Zach Taylor, the head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals, because this was his reaction to the news and kind of what happened with the injury, when it happened, and where they can go going forward yesterday when he addressed the media.
Obviously, it's tough to see your starting quarterback, who's as good as Joe Burrow, is go down. That's tough. But was proud of the way the guys responded, and proud of the way that they've carried themselves today. And I think this longer weekend comes at a good time for us, to chance to regroup and get healthy and come back next week and get ready to attack Pittsburgh. And so I've really liked what I've seen from these guys. Again, we've got a lot of talent on this roster, and this season's far from over. And I'm excited to see how the guys respond next week.
So Zach Taylor says all the right things there, Michael, but is the season far from over, or is it actually just over for Cincinnati?
Well, I think, look, they're going to, I mean, what he's saying is he's not giving himself any excuses, and he's got faith in Browning that he can come in and execute the offense. I mean, the last drive of the game, they got 70 yards of their 270 that they got in the game. They got 6 first downs on that last drive when the game was essentially over. You know, the problem is, to me, with Cincy, is the issue that Burrow has masked and Chase and Higgins have masked is that they are so one-dimensional in terms of they have to rely on Burrow making great throws. They don't run the ball effectively, right? They don't. Mixon ran the ball the other night more by they had to. They don't really change up what they do offensively in terms of, you know, they're in shotgun quite a bit. I mean, this is a team that's 31st in the league in rushing attempts. And now you've got a young quarterback who you're going to have to change that over. And by the way, they're 31st in yards in terms of rushing. Now, you know me, I'm not a big believer that you run the ball to score points, but you run the ball to control the game. And the issue for the Bengals have been all year, they can't stop the run and they can't run the football. They're just not physical enough in the trenches. Maybe that's because the last two seasons, which we tend to forget a little bit about, they've played a lot of games, right?
Yep.
I learned this at the Patriots. You know, when you're playing deep into the playoffs, you kind of get worn down a little bit. Now, the Chiefs and the Eagles do a great job of being able to manage it, but some teams can't, and they've lost key components to their team. This is not the same team. They'll be a tough out. I'm not saying they're going to not play hard, but obviously when you were 31st in the league in rushing, you're saying to your quarterback, you got to make plays to help us win. And I think that's going to put a lot of pressure on Browning to do that. And I'm not sure he's capable of doing that from what I've seen so far.
Yeah, Jake Browning will now be the starting quarterback going forward. And Jake Browning, near and dear to my heart as a Washington Husky, having watched his whole college career there. Browning, he's accurate, but not the strongest arms, and that's probably putting it kindly there. So they'll have to kind of work around that. But he came in, and kudos to him. Like he was battling. He was scrambling around there, making some plays and a nice touchdown pass to Jamar Chase as well. But it's going to be uphill climbing for the Cincinnati Bengals. But when you take
at least he brings experience. I mean, the guy started, he started how many games? I mean,
a zillion games.
And I mean, he's a little bit like Sam Ellinger, right? I mean, maybe he's better, but they're a lot alike. They're a guy that's, you know, he's 6'2". He's not as big as you would hope he would be.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't have the most powerful arm, but he does know how to play the position. Look, they decided to go with him, and they let Brendan Allen walk away in free agency, and they feel comfortable with him.
Yeah, I think from the AFC North kind of picture here, because you look at the division, the betting market will tell you that it's all but done. The Ravens are going to win the division. They're minus 300 now at DraftKings to win the North. Pittsburgh is right behind them at plus 380. The Browns plus 475. This Browns-Steelers game all of a sudden becomes very, very high leverage to who can kind of be that team to challenge the Baltimore Ravens here. But for Pittsburgh, I mean, we talked about how they kind of are just the tortoise, or they're the tortoise in this race, to where they just stay the course. And here they are. Now they're going to face backup quarterbacks this weekend and next weekend as well on the road in games that they thought they might lose. Now it's an advantageous situation to where we could be talking about the 8-3 Pittsburgh Steelers in a couple weeks here, Michael.
Well, and you know what's the funny thing, Femi, and you and I both know this, right? If the starters would have started in the game would have been ugly. And just because the backups are playing isn't going to make that, like, it isn't going to be like the Steelers go out there and dominate 27-3. It'll be an ugly game.
Yep.
And it'll come down to the fourth quarter. It'll be just the way they like it there, you know, in Pittsburgh. That's just what they like. They like that ugly, you know, we're going to grind it out. Now, the last 2 weeks, they have run the football very effectively, 375 yards rushing the last 2 weeks. Do you think they can run the ball on the Browns? I don't.
Yeah, I don't really think so. That's going to be one ugly football game. It'll be Dorian Thompson-Robinson at quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. We'll talk about that game as well as the rest of the AFC North. Mark Andrews, also a big loss for the Baltimore Ravens. We don't want to forget about that as well. But coming up next, we'll get to college football with our buddy Tim Murray joining us here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
With so many games on the board, there's no better time to put the VSiN experts to work for you. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get access to our daily best bets with a leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game, plus betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video access. Sign up today and get your first 30 days for only $19 to see everything VSiN has to up your betting game. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up now. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe here in downtown Las Vegas, Michael Lombardi in the great state of New Jersey. And joining us right now, as he always does each and every Saturday, get this, Michael, the penultimate Saturday of the college football regular season. It's our buddy Tim Murray, host of VSiN Primetime, which you can check out Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 Eastern Time. Also host of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Get it wherever you get your podcast. Tim, you have a lot of plays today. I do want to start with a game that's not on your card right now. Obviously, it's the big game in Corvallis, playoff implication, Heisman implications. It's everything is on the line here as Washington Huskies right now, a dog still against Oregon State here. No best bet for you on this one, but how do you kind of see this? Do you have a lean side or total with Washington taking on Oregon State?
Yeah, no best bet because preseason when we were doing the podcast and putting out our win total bets, my favorite play was Oregon State over 8 wins. And that closed 8.5. And that's where we sit right now, right? They're 8-2. surprising that they lose to Washington State, but I guess you catch Washington State at the right time early in the year. So it sort of is a best bet. I do like Oregon State here. Obviously, you know, it's funny. It's been a popular play on VSiN, but you know, you look everywhere else, and I don't think it's as popular. But so fascinated by this game, guys, on a multitude of fronts. And we'll just start with the home field advantage. You know, no game should be solely handicapped based off of, hey, this team's really good at home. But man, is Oregon State good at home. Since 2021, guys, they are 16-1 ATS Wow. That is insane. 16-1 against the spread, 16-1 straight up. The only loss coming last year to USC, the only non-cover coming earlier this year to San Diego State when they were laying 24 and they won by 17. I love this game because it's contrasting styles. Washington wants to throw the ball. Oregon State's secondary, as we saw against Washington State earlier this year, can be a little bit leaky. And Oregon State wants to run the ball with their cast in the backfield. So I do think Oregon State ultimately gets the win here. But look, I've doubted Washington a couple times already this year. I thought they would get tripped up by USC. They were able to win that game. Obviously, I think Oregon State is a superior team than the Trojans, but Washington State has answered the bell a lot. But this has been a gauntlet for Washington. The Pac-12 is loaded, and week after week they're being tested, right? Last week they have to play Utah. Wasn't that long ago they're hosting Oregon. They had that flu bug where they almost tripped up against Arizona State. So Washington's kind of been going through it here since that Oregon game. So I think ultimately they hit an L today. I do like Oregon State here in this spot. Not an official play on the website because you have to scroll a little bit further down and see my over 8 wins. So it is technically a play for me. I'm rolling with the Beavers.
I want to stay in the Pac-12 for a second. Yep. I was surprised that when I looked at Monday and I saw that Arizona, which has beat Oregon State at home 27-24 in the 1st of November, the beginning of the month or the end of October. And, Utah, they play Utah today and they're a favorite against Utah. And that kind of surprised me. I mean, I know Arizona's played really well, but that surprised me, Tim, and it surprises me that it isn't more a popular pick. Is Utah faded that much for you?
Not as much, Michael. I mean, look, Kyle Whittingham has done really a remarkable job this year when you think about the hand he's been dealt. Utah's not a team that recruits on the elite level. And when you lose a 6-year senior quarterback at Cam Rising, really the whole entire season, and Brent Keithy, their tight end, they've done an incredible job keeping this thing together. You saw last week the ability to keep that close. They ultimately get the cover, albeit fortunate, needing a Washington player to drop the ball at the 2-yard line on a pick six and then getting a blocked field goal. But I don't have a play on this one. My initial lean was Arizona. Noah Fifita has really stepped in and done a really incredible job for Jaden Delora, who went out with injury. You look at the numbers that we're showing for those watching. This Arizona team, the market has been slow to figure them out. Jed Fish, I think, Michael, we've talked about this where, he'll probably be on some short lists this year for some bigger jobs. But it wasn't a play for me. It was a slight lean to Arizona, but I'm going to sit back and watch this one. I do think similar to what we saw last week with Washington, right? Utah has now what I think back-to-back weeks. They took out USC, and then now they have this. Then they lose on the road to Oregon. So another situation where how much is left in the gas tank for this Utah team? Yeah. So. Really, really big game here for the Utes. Curious to see how they respond. I messed up on the schedule there. It was USC, Oregon, then they had the Arizona State just domination, and then losing on the road to Washington. So no play for me on this one. But I understand what you're saying, Michael. Where this opened around a pick and moved a little bit towards the Wildcats.
We're speaking with Tim Murray, host of VSiN Primetime and the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. All right, Tim, let's get to your best bets. We'll start in the SEC. Florida at Missouri. Mizzou, big performance last week after a lot of people did not like them in that spot. They go ahead and run away from Tennessee. Now they're laying 11 over at DraftKings against the Gators, total 57. What's the play in this one for you?
Yeah, this is a hold your nose special here. I'm rolling with the Florida Gators here, catching the points. Look, I was dead wrong. I was one of those dopes on Tennessee last week. And, sometimes you sit back, you're like, well, I'm wrong because Cody Schrader might still be scoring touchdowns against that Tennessee defense. Missouri deserves all the credit in the world for how they've played so far this year. Eli Drinkwitz going out, getting Kirby Moore, offensive coordinator from Fresno State. And that has really you know, made things pop there in Columbia. And it was no fluke, I think, that they were competitive just a couple weeks ago against Georgia. But, you know, you beat Georgia, or excuse me, you lose to Georgia, competitive game between the hedges. You come back home, you destroy Tennessee, and now you got to play Florida. And I'm just wondering if the market's gone a little bit too far, right? You close as a 2-point home underdog to Tennessee, and now you're laying north of double digits against Florida, a Florida team that is certainly not great. I think they'll be feisty, though. Billy Napier, as Matt Eumanns like to call him, Sunbelt Billy, is not a guy that he likes to trust all that much. But overall, if you go back to his days in the Sunbelt and now to Florida, 19-8 ATS is old Sunbelt Billy. So you saw it last week. They didn't get the cover, but they were fighting till the end against LSU. There'll probably be a lot of points today in Columbia. I'm going to hope that Florida scores enough of them. I'm going to take the 11.5 that are out there on the Gators.
USF and Texas Tech, both 5-5, playing for bowl eligibility, essentially, right? They got to get that sixth win, you know, and Texas Tech, after a great win against the backup quarterback at Kansas last week and beating TCU, put themselves in this position. But you're going to roll with the Red Raiders here, taking a -2.5, huh?
Yeah, I loved UCF last week, Michael. Great spot for them, right? Taking on Oklahoma State after they had won Bedlam, and they pummeled Oklahoma State, outgained them 592-277 in the rain, forced a bunch of turnovers. Really two good running backs in this game. RJ Harvey for UCF, 5 straight 100-yard games, had over 200 yards last week for the Knights. And then for the Red Raiders, Taj Brooks over 100 yards in 3 straight games, 7 of 8 so far this year. You know, it's been a bit of a disappointing season for Texas Tech. This was a team that, a lot of people that I talked to preseason, guys thought, hey, they could potentially contend for the Big 12. Obviously, that's not the case. They're 5-5, as is UCF. But, you know, I do look at, you know, bowl eligibility as a motivating factor for some teams. And, you know, for Texas Tech, obviously, Joey McGuire, their head coach in year 2, is never going to come out and say, hey, guys, we can't win next week at Texas, so we really need to win this week. But I do think there's going to be a little extra oomph there from the Red Raiders in Lubbock. So I will lay the short 2.5 with the Red Raiders at home against the Knights.
Bowl eligibility was definitely a factor for Washington State last night, if you watched that game against Colorado.
They should have done that against Stanford 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, then they'd already be bowl eligible. We got about 40 seconds left. Tim, what do you like in Purdue Northwestern?
I don't know if I like it as much now. I think I'm seeing the threes all get scooped up. But the reason I was on the Purple Cats, I mean, this open 2, Northwestern -2, guys, it flipped to Purdue -3. So I took the 3. I do like Northwestern still under 3. If you could find a 3, obviously that would be the way I would roll here. But Northwestern, what a great story it has been. David Braun gets the full-time job. And I didn't see the market. It has completely flipped back to Northwestern as the favorite. Man, that has moved
unbelievable.
4 points overnight, guys. So let's go Purple Cats. Hopefully you get it done.
Yeah, no, definitely. Quite the turnaround for this Northwestern team after the way this thing started out in the summertime. He is
great
work,
Tim.
VSiN Primetime, VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Make sure you check out all of his work there. Tim, best of luck with the bets, man.
Happy Thanksgiving, guys.
Awesome stuff there from Tim. We'll get to the college football headlines and the marquee games when we come back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
With the lowest prices for over 30 years, you'll always find what you love and love what you find only at Total Wine & More. Drink responsibly, be 21. Tell you what, it's total wine season here, Michael, as we're getting close to Thanksgiving, buddy. Get that bourbon flowing. The old fashions will be flowing next Thursday. Oh, man. Yeah. Can't wait for that. This is the Lombardi Line, hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network. Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. Femi Abebefe hanging out here in downtown Las Vegas. Thank you to Tim Murray, who joined us in the last segment, giving out his college football card. He is the host of VSiN Primetime. You should check that out Monday through Friday here on VSiN, 6 to 9 Eastern Time, and also the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Get it wherever you get your podcast. Coming up in the next segment, Chris Sims, who you see on NBC's Football Night in America, will be joining us in the next segment, as we'll talk about all the big headlines in the National Football League, including the big injury for the Baltimore Ravens. It wasn't just the Bengals that suffered an injury. The Ravens also lost their tight end Mark Andrews for the foreseeable future. Maybe it's not season ending, but it seems like it's going to be a long time there with the ankle injury and the fractured tibia there for Mark Andrews. So we'll get into that with Chris Sims here. But let's talk some college football here, Michael. The Michigan Wolverines, they've been in the headlines headlines for about a month now. And yesterday we saw another development here for Michigan. Obviously, this comes after Thursday when Jim Harbaugh decided to accept the 3-game suspension. He will not be on the sidelines once again today as they take on Maryland. But the NCAA, though, informed Michigan this week that it obtained evidence suggesting that a university booster helped fund the impermissible sign-stealing operation run by former staffer Connor Stallions. And also Michigan also received evidence that suggested former linebackers coach Chris Partridge was tampering with the ongoing investigation. He was also fired yesterday. They play Maryland today. They're laying 19. How do you think they handle all of this stuff where it's now become more and more that's piled onto this whole Michigan sign-stealing thing?
Oh, I think they like it. I don't think it's going to bother them one bit. I think this is Michigan is us against the world. I think it actually puts more fuel in their fire. I mean, you know, this defense is gives up 7 points a game. I mean, last week, the Penn State, you know, after that game, they had to fire their offensive coordinator. It was so bad. And they didn't even throw the ball in the second half. I mean, they took J.J. McCarthy's Heisman Trophy candidacy and put it right outside. So, you know, and they still won to dominate the game. Femi, I don't see them buckling. I really don't. I think it unifies them more. I think it's they take it as we didn't, you know, whatever that was going on with the sign stealing. And it sounds like Watergate to me. You've got an operation running independently outside of the White House. You got an operation in working outside of the Michigan office being funded by outside sources. I mean, it, all we need is Woodward and Bernstein to come in and investigate this thing. And we can recreate the 70s. I mean, I'm not trying to make light of it, but I think the players feel like, look, if you want to accuse us of cheating or having benefits of sign stealing, we're going to show you how good we really are.
Well, that's what they all tweeted out last Friday when the initial punishment came down. They just said bet. And that was kind of the motivating factor. We saw Sharon Morn with the emotional sideline interview after the game, after they beat Penn State. Like, clearly, like, the Michigan versus everybody. It is funny. It's Michigan versus everybody. Then we're also America's team as well. I think the two things kind of work. And I'm like, aren't they opposed to each other? But hey, you know, whatever it takes to get motivated. And they're definitely, like you said, using this as motivation here for them. But do you, because I asked you about this with Colorado earlier in the season, to where you have such these emotional highs. Like, can you keep going back to that? Well, like, we asked this about Colorado. I mean, their deficiencies are not just emotional letdowns and all that stuff. Like, they just don't have the talent. Michigan does have the talent, but man, like, for every game to be emotional, I feel like that's also taxing as well, mentally and physically.
Yeah, well, you might feel it's emotional. I don't think they feel it's emotional. I think they feel like this is just part of who they are, and they're going to deal with it, and they're going to go out and have great practices, and they're going to go out and compete and have the opportunity to do what they do at the best. And, you know, without their head coach on the sideline, you know, they're one soldier down, so they're going to make sure they do everything in their power to make him feel like he's part of the game, even though he's not on the sideline. So, yeah, I don't see it as a problem for them. I really don't. I mean, look, they're playing a Maryland team that gave up 51 points to Penn State. I mean, this defense is going to have a hard time. And the other thing, I think when you play Michigan, they beat you up. I mean, they're physical up front. I mean, for a team to go in the second half and not throw a pass against a top 10 ranked team is somewhat, you know, that's a little bit arrogant, isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't it just?
It's disrespectful.
And I think they're... And they didn't have a problem with it. They didn't have a problem with it. None of the players complained. You just hear one receiver complaining about it, did you? I mean, I was complaining on the couch more than any Michigan player. We're like, are we going to throw the ball a little bit here? Like, can't we run a play action? If we've called 25 straight throws, can't we call a play action?
I mean, the way Penn State was playing offense, why take on the risk, I guess? If we could just run the football and run this game out and get out of here with a victory and no sweat, I mean, kudos to Michigan for doing that. We've already seen the betting market with this game. There's interest on Maryland. I think a lot of people are playing sort of maybe this could be a look ahead spot to the big game next week with Ohio State. But as we've said, like, Michigan looks like they're out to prove something. I'm not sure if they're going to be looking past anybody at this point in the season. The way I would look at this, if I were to bet this game, might be the under, because if they just go ahead and physically beat Maryland up and just run the football like we saw last week, the clock is going to be going. I mean, last week's game was like the fastest college football game I think I've ever watched. That thing got done in about 3 hours. Usually it's 3.5-4 hours for college football, but Michigan, they're just going to keep that clock going and ripping off all those runs to where maybe this goes under and Michigan wins this like 38-7 or something like that. Like, well, that's kind of how I see this.
Think about this though, Femi. The Minnesota game, the Michigan scored 52 alone.
That's true.
The Indiana game, they scored 52. the Michigan State game, they scored 49. And Purdue, they scored 41. So I get they play at a low pace, and that pace has changed since Nebraska. You know, Rutgers and Bowling Green, they kind of handled them rather easily, 31-6, UNLV 35-7. So, yeah, I mean, maybe they just want to go to College Park and just get in and out of there rather quickly and get ready for the Ohio State game next Saturday. But, look, I think the one thing about this team is they are well coached. They execute. They play with great pad level. They're physical. And that defense is good. And Maryland's going to try to do some things. They'll turn the ball over.
Yeah. No, but Maryland, they like to throw the football around. And if they get hot, maybe this gets interesting. But if not, this could be a over quick, fast, and in a hurry for the Terps there. Let's get to the Pac-12 game, though, Michael. Washington and Oregon State. You talked about this one saying, hey, like, Washington is still a dog. They're still a dog right now as we sit here in the morning of the game. 1.5 is the spread, total 62. Would you take the points with the Huskies, or do you agree with Tim and go ahead and maybe land it with Oregon State?
No, I think I might take Washington. I have a faith in DeBoard. I mean, he's obviously, DeBoard knows from being the head coach at Fresno, being up at Washington in the second season, I think he understands that, you know, that he's going to have to play a little different game. Now, his defense is what worries you the most, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's really where you get the most concern, because Oregon State is physical on defense. And, you know, they held and they throw it around. I mean, they can rush the passer. They use a multiple scheme, and they've got linebackers that can attack the pocket, and they slow the pace of the game down. When they played Arizona State, I mean, that was a close game, and Arizona State got ahead of them 27-17 late in the fourth quarter. They put kind of, and that they scored late in the game to put the get to make it closer than it seemed. But Arizona kind of controlled them with their defense, and they were able to handle that. I don't know if Washington can do that. Washington's defense is just so inconsistent, and they struggle really against the teams that can run the football effectively. And that's what Oregon State wants to do. They want to run the ball and play action. But for me, I think I'm going to go with Penix in the game over DJ, because I just think Penix will make more plays.
Yeah, I would say DJ is probably the quarterback that's most likely to make a mistake in a close game. Would be my guess. Like, Penix has been pretty nails in these close games, as we've seen. I mean, the Oregon game, Penix had the drive there, and then he's also been able to at least make enough plays to help this team win. To me, this.
Don't you think though? It benefits. It really benefits Washington to be the dog here, because it gives the board a chance to say, "Hey, fellas, do you realize they don't think we can win here?"
Yeah,
I mean, it really creates a great narrative for a coach, because as a coach, you're always looking for, how do I get my team motivated, right? If they were a touchdown favorite in this game, I would say, man, that's going to be a concern. But they're the dog. We have such little respect by the bookmakers. We're the dog in this game. I think that's going to change a lot of things.
No, I think 100%. And maybe Washington might be this year's TCU, to where the betting market, because I don't know if you remember last year, like, the betting market was adamant that TCU was not as good as their record suggested. And every week it felt like TCU was getting bet against, like, week after week after week. And that's kind of been the trend with Washington here. Like, Oregon got bet against Washington. Huskies find a way to win that one. Like, USC got bet. Utah got bet last week. That went from 8.5 to 7 at close. And the Huskies keep winning these football games. So where maybe this is like this year's TCU, and maybe they eventually trip up at some point. Maybe when they play Oregon again in the Pac-12 title game, if that's what it is, maybe they'll ultimately trip up. But to me, like, it does feel like Washington's being a little bit disrespected, and Kalen DeBoer, he didn't have to search for any sort of motivational tricks this week. He could just show these kids the point spread and say, hey, all the odds makers think that you're the dog. Go out and prove them wrong.
Like, and they all say we can't win in They all say we can't win in Corvallis. Let's see what we can do. Let's go win in Corvallis.
And we'll say Corvallis, having been there, tough place to play. Weird stuff happens in Corvallis. So that is going to be a tough one, but I can't wait to watch that game tonight. Total's at 62. Might be the last split team that has the ball ultimately wins the game. All right, we'll put the college football off to the side. Chris Sims of NBC joins us next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
DK NBA deals are just absolutely out of this world, and you can go ahead and change your life in an instant. But no matter how the action unfolds, you know DraftKings Sportsbook has your back. This week, new customers, $100 instantly in bonus bets, $150 if you bet just $5 on basketball. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VSIN. The crown is yours. All you got to do is just bet $5, you can get $150 instantly there. So just excellent stuff from DraftKings Sportsbook. This is the Lombardi Line on the DraftKings Network. Femi Bebefe alongside Michael Lombardi here on this College Football Saturday. We'll talk some more college football in just a little bit here, but joining us now, you see him on NBC's Football Night in America each and every week. He's an NFL analyst for the Peacock. It's the one and only Chris Sims joining us here on the Lombardi Line. Chris, we appreciate the time as always. Obviously, Thursday night, the big news there, Joe Burrow suffers the season-ending injury, but for Baltimore, they also suffered an injury as well. Very impactful. Mark Andrews out for the foreseeable future with the ankle injury. How do you think this Andrews injury changes the way the Ravens play offense going forward?
Well, I don't know if it'll change a whole lot with how they play. It's just that they're going to have to find other avenues here to figure out how to attack this a little bit. The big thing I look at here with Mark Andrews is, you know, he's off the run game, play action. Lamar's comfortable with him, right? So he's always looking for him over the middle of the field. Isaiah Likely is a good pass catching target. You know, Mark Andrews is a good blocker, not a great blocker, but I don't think the offense is going to change schematically or anything like that. Not at this point, no. But they have other weapons and other avenues. I think that's the good thing about Baltimore. I don't know if Mike agrees as compared to years past, but with Bateman being healthy, Zay Flowers, you know, if the O-line can stay healthy and Ronnie Stanley get back, they got plenty of other ways where they can beat you on the offensive side of the ball. Sorry about that phone ringing there.
Yeah, Christopher, I definitely agree with you there. I think they're running the ball, to me, as much as they did last year. They're 31st in passing attempts, yet they're more explosive, right? They're 9th or 10th in the league in yards per pass per play. And so they're making more explosive plays when they do choose to throw it. So I'm with you. I mean, I think a lot of it is the Ravens are high on Likely. I'm not sure Lamar trusts Likely like he did Andrews. Now he's going to have to. But let's shift up to Buffalo, right? I watch Buffalo on tape. I see a team offensively that just runs plays. When Brian was there, they've really never run an offense. They don't set anything up. They're just, Josh, you take the game over. And I know that Dorsey paid a price for this, but how do you feel when you watch this Buffalo offense?
Well, you know, those are some of my lines right there. I call their offense, or, you know, a Rolodex offense. That's what, you know, it's, we're under the center for two plays. And then, okay, what are we doing here? What are we setting up? And then we're in the shotgun for the next 10 plays. And it's just, I like this play. I like that play. I'm with you. I don't really understand. There's no sequencing in the play calling. You know, how we know with some of the great play callers in the sport, but so talk about Shanahan. He gives you a little bit of this. He gives you a little bit of this. And then it looks like this, and all of a sudden it's that, right? There is no flow or setting up of anything in the offense. It's all on 17. That's the problem there. They know that too. The players know that. Their defense isn't as dominant as years past. You know, their offense is not as creative as it was with Daboll. Daboll at least had moving parts, motions, and he gave you things to think about. I feel like they're a little stagnant. Of course, they can't run the ball on a consistent basis. I know they did it a little last week, but everybody runs on Denver. We know that, so I'm not ready to write home and go, oh, man, they're going to start being a good running team up in Buffalo. And then you add on top of, hey, Stephon Diggs, we know, is a really good wide receiver. He's awesome. Is he top five superstar receiver in football right now? Not for my money, he's not. He's top 10-ish if you want to get into that. But the problem after that, Mike, and I think you agree with this, is what else is there? Who else scares you on their offense, right? So there's no scheme that scares a defense where they go, ooh, we got to do this and stop this scheme. And then on top of that, it's what player scares you? What player makes you double team or change something in a big situation? And I don't think they have that. And that's what bothers me about Buffalo more than anything.
And do you think the Jets can exploit it? I mean, I agree with you. I think Buffalo's a below-average talent team with a great quarterback. That's the way I see Buffalo. Right. I've seen Buffalo that way. Yeah. But he covers up so much of it. I mean, look, let's face it. 45 of the 60 wins he's had in the NFL have been by 7 or more points. And really, their offense has never been dominating. I mean, their defense has given up 33 points in the last 3 playoff games. And nobody wants to talk about that. But that's the reality of it.
Four. Yeah, right. I agree with you. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead, Mike. Sorry.
No, but I wanted to ask you, you know, because I know you know the Jets really well. Do you think the Jets, who are horrendous offensively, 32nd in the league in third down, 32nd in red zone, I mean, they're horrible in every category, even though Salah says Wilson's playing really good. You know, do you think they can take advantage of them?
I do think they can take advantage of them. Yeah, I do. I mean, their talent level is way above the Buffalo Bills, like you talked about. It's one of the most talented defenses in football, right? And because there's no setting up, and then the one thing you can exploit the Jets with a little bit is a dominating run game. Well, the Bills don't have that, right? They're the Jets, with how they play their Seattle 3 and their coverages there, they're very sound. It's hard to expose them, right? And then the one thing that, you know, this is where I wonder with the Jets, because they can be a little aggressive and crazy. But I meant to say this when we talked about Josh Allen too. The game plan for everybody's the same every week when they play Buffalo. It's don't let him out of the pocket and don't let him throw 50-yard bombs. If he doesn't do that, what else is going to beat you? That's really what it comes down to. And the Jets have figured that out last year, and they make him impatient, and of course then he forces the football. But you're right, Mike. I think the whole thing is, you know, can their offense do enough to just get a few more points than Josh Allen? I do think they can muck it up and make it an ugly football game, you know, 16, 13, 17, 14. I think they're capable of that, but I don't trust their offense, to your point. That's what really scares me.
We're speaking with Chris Sims here, former NFL quarterback, now analyst at NBC Sports. You can see him on Football Night in America before Sunday Night Football. You know, it's interesting hearing you guys talk about that. The betting market just does not want to quit the Buffalo Bills. This has gone from 7 to now 7.5 in some spots here. So it's like apparently there's still the Bills love out there despite what we've seen offensively. Chris, I want to talk about the game that you guys will have tomorrow night, though. The Vikings at the Broncos. It's 2.5 right now is the line. Total 42.5. How do you see this kind of playing out? Both of these teams kind of surging over the last month or so.
No question. I said a few weeks ago, you know, the Vikings to me they're better this year than they were last year. I had more faith in them this year, especially before Kirk Cousins got hurt, of winning a playoff game than I did last year. Last year it was just smoke and mirrors. This year there's something to it a little bit. I mean, we know the offense is good, but Brian Flores has changed the defense, the creativity, the aggressiveness, the never letting a quarterback feel comfortable really about what coverage is this. I don't know. There's a bunch of people standing here and now they're playing this coverage. These guys are blitzing. These guys are dropping. So he makes you think as a quarterback and an offensive coordinator, Flores. I love that about him. Denver is definitely surging. I mean, you know, I think, Mike, you would agree. I mean, Denver, Sean Payton's rewired the robot of Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
You watch that game on Monday night and Russell's at the line of scrimmage. I mean, you know, he's checking the different plays, making sure everybody's on the same page. I haven't ever seen Russell Wilson in control of an offense to that degree. So between that and then Vance Joseph simplifying things on the defensive side of the ball, where they're not trying to just do everything in the playbook, they've become better on the defense. And really, honestly, at home, that type of game, I think Sean Payton will have a good plan for the Brian Flores defense. I'd be shocked if they don't. And as much as I love this Dobbs story and all that, for me to totally buy into it, I need a little more information, another week or two before I'm buying into the Vikings and making some big time run here with Josh Dobbs.
Yeah, I agree. And Dobbs has beaten people with his feet more than anything. I mean, he's rushed for 144 yards the last 2 weeks, so that's really been the biggest issue. We only have a minute left. Talk about Houston, what you saw with Kyler Murray and with C.J. Stroud last week, and what you think of that game.
Well, you know I love C.J. Stroud. I love him. I really do. C.J. Stroud was my favorite guy coming out. And, you know, I mean, he's proven me right here. He's amazing in the pocket. It's not only the talent he has. I mean, he's unbelievably accurate and can throw the 100-mile-per-hour fastball and paint corners with it, right? It's the nuanced plays, too, Mike, that amazes me. Knows where to go when it's hot. You know, doesn't take sacks. Oh, I'm looking downfield trying to be aggressive. The pocket's closing and he knows where to dump it off and, you know, get out of trouble that way or not take the sack and get the ball out of his hand that way. So that's where I'm so impressed with C.J. Stroud. Houston's a handful. Their offense is damn good with how Bobby Slowick has, organized that. They play through the run and the play action pass. Kyler Murray, I was amazed with how he looked last week. I mean, basically less than a year to come out and kind of control the ball and see the field the way he did and make a few plays, and they even dropped a few passes. I think this is a quiet sleeper, like, upset game, and you got to watch out here. Arizona could pull the upset, but I like Houston.
There it is. The Cardinals right now, six-point underdogs. He is Chris Sims. Check out all his great analysis over at NBC. You'll see him on Football Night in America tomorrow night before Vikings at the Broncos. Chris, we appreciate the time. Be well.
Thank you, guys. Be good.
Awesome. We'll start the hour with the NFL news and notes here on the other side.